Therese and Robert, thank you so much for joining us. You guys have a great story and another awesome Queensland story about how you got into wine and became vignerons of, well, now an acclaimed five-star rated by James Halliday Winery. So first of all, I get some, Therese, you began your love affair when you were an au pair in France. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I had a long love affair with wine. I was fortunate to meet some really famous people over there in France when I was an au pair, but I did the vintage there and met Robert Parker, had dinner with him, met Gary Farr-Jones, Nick Farr-Jones from Bannockburn, met some wonderful vignerons from France. And from that point forward, I kind of realised that wine was a bit more than a drink because it was such a ceremony there. Each meal was all about the wine. And I continued that love of wine, met Robert, and he came from the other side. He came from the growing side. So that's where we had a light bulb moment, and it was like, why don't we
buy a winery?
So that's what we did. We bought a winery.
So you're basically a match made in heaven. So, Robert, I understand that you're more of a scientist, and as Therese says, you're the grower. So where did your passion for wine come in?
Okay, I'm going to correct that a little bit.
Oh, sure.
So John Handy is our winemaker and viticulturist. If you actually look at my business card, it technically says aspiring tractor boy. So
I did see that.
I've still got my trainer wheels on to some extent. But no, I've been a wine drinker for a long, long time. And I think certainly the last few years of being here has focused that from a hazy, I like wine and I basically like these types, into knowing an awful lot more about what I like and what people like and how that's grown. And we've been listening to the show this morning, and the consistent theme is you need good grapes to make good wine. And that's something the Granite Belt can certainly deliver. And certainly with John's direction, we can deliver here. So it's been a fun ride.
That's great to hear. So touching on that, can you explain why do grapes grow so well in the Granite Belt?
Oh, look, I think one of the best things I've heard, it starts out with the community up, the grape growing community up here is very strong. Part of the GBWT organisation, Granite Belt Wine Tourism, we do a vineyard walk every month, except in the middle of vintage, and we all go out to someone's vineyard. We wander around and hear their stories and what they're up to. And we had an expert there one day who was actually talking about organic mildewicides. And he was saying the very best conditions to grow good wine grapes are an elevated desert. Now, we're not strictly a desert, but we are relatively low rainfall, and we are certainly elevated. We're sitting here at 925 metres at the moment. So we get a lot of things. We get plenty of sunshine, which you obviously need to develop the sugars in the grapes. We get cool winters or cold winters. This morning it was about -1.5 or -2. So the grapes go to sleep nicely and we get a nice dormancy out of them. And in summer we get cool evenings. So our ripening period is extended and we pick considerably later than you would expect. So the grapes get to hang on the vines and produce some beautiful beautiful flavours.
And aromatics, they're really aromatic here.
And then the other thing you need is some poor soils. And being basically decomposed granite up here, we certainly qualify there.
Which gives you some minerality as well to the decomposed granite. And what I've seen is that the vines struggle a little bit, and whenever you're struggling, you're feeling like you're dying, and if you're dying, you're going to produce better babies. And the grapes, Robert's shaking his head. And the grapes are the babies, and they're much more, prominent in a vine that thinks that this is its last chance at procreation. Yeah.
That's actually a really great way to put it. I do know you'd actually touched on that before when we'd spoken to Therese. It's a beautiful way to explain that is that's the way that the world does work. All of a sudden, if there is a threat to our survival, it's like, that's it. Get down, guys, and let's go. I think it's wonderful. Yeah. It's exactly what the grapes
protect do. Protect the children, isn't it?
Yeah, protect the children. That's it. It's what we've got, legacy. So on that, you were talking about aromatics in there. And so I know you do make some fantastic, you and the Granite Belt do produce amazing Fiano. It's a bit of a standout varietal for you. Can you tell us a bit more about your Fiano and how you grow it?
It's actually an interesting vine to grow. I guess the first thing is, yes, it does like this climate here. I guess in some ways, even though we're not close to the ocean, we're in some way Mediterranean. I think also the fact that we're such a low yield area, you know, a big yield for us is 3 to 3.5 tons per acre. So, you know, that I think that really packs the punch into the Fiano grape. And I get shot if I reveal too much of this, but we use different pruning techniques on the Fiano to most of our other grapes, which gives it a nice yield. But something else about Fiano, there is a little bit in the winemaking to make a great Fiano as well, and that's being very careful of the aromatic chemicals, because it is such an aromatic wine. It should hit you in the nose like almost like a tropical fruit salad. And then be as dry as a stone when you go to drink it. So, you know, typically our Fianos are less than 1 gram of residual sugars per litre. And yet they're so fruit forward and so aromatic that you don't really notice that.
But it's an interesting aromatic. It's like a peppery sort of curried, just on many levels, interesting and different.
So interesting you said peppery. I actually was drinking, I just had half a bottle last night of your lovely 2018 Syrah, and it hits me on the palate in ways that I really appreciate, and similar to a Hunter Valley Shiraz, where there are some peppery notes and a bit of spice to it. So it's that definitely does come through with your wines. So your Shiraz Viognier and your Shiraz Mourvèdre Grenache are highly esteemed by Halliday and the likes. What is it that you're doing with those wines that are making them so great?
Those wines are definitely in the European style, more elegant. Whilst they are fruit forward, they still maintain that acidity and the tannins that come through.
Look, particularly in the Shiraz Viognier, the first thing is those grapes are off 60-year-old vines that are ungrafted. So they're on their own rootstock, which is pretty unusual. And I guess, you know, if we were ever to get phylloxera into the paddock, we'd be devastated.
We put up a deer fence. Does that help?
No, I don't think so. So first thing is those grapes are, it's a very low yield block, very particular and distinct flavour about them, even compared to the other Shiraz that we grow on that same vineyard. And the second thing is it's got to be a co-ferment for Shiraz Viognier. So it's a relatively low concentration of Viognier, only I think we use around about 6% normally, but hanging on to that white Viognier until such time as you can put it in the fermenter with the Shiraz is a bit of a trick, and then making sure that they are co-fermented, and that produces that lovely elegant smoothness that you get out of a great Shiraz Viognier. The Shiraz Mourvèdre Grenache, all grown on the same vineyard. It's only a very small vineyard, but planted by two consecutive owners. The first one about 60 years ago planted the Shiraz, and then a local high school teacher who bought the vineyard second over decided to be Mr. Rhone. So on there we've got the right proportions of the right grapes to make those two wines, as well as Marsan, which of course is another Rhone Valley speciality. But it's the climate and the quality of the grapes and then John's brilliant winemaking that produces those beautiful wines.
John's co-ferment of that Shiraz Viognier is a very colourful thing. I'm the artistic one in this partnership. And to see the purple grapes sprinkled with green-white grapes is a fascinating thing. And I also tell a story when we get visitors here at the Cellar Door about our Pinot Gris, which is an interesting colour story, how it's actually a red grape that a brother of it is described as black, you know, Pinot Noir, which everybody loves these days, and we're going to be planting that. But the Pinot Gris that we have is similar, and it's described as grey in French. So you've got a red wine that's described as black. It is not picked green like they do in Pinot Grigios. It's picked at its full ripeness. And normally you'd make a white wine, but we actually make a pink wine. In fact, it's so pink it's like rose gold. So it goes through many colours in that little story.
Wow, beautiful.
But it tickles my fancy. Hmm.
So you say you're the creative element to the partnership, and there always needs to be one. Does that also lend itself to being artistic?
Yes, of course. But not just on canvas.
No, of course not. So I did hear a little story about the reason why you are called Heritage Estate, and it has something to do with a very significant table that may have graced the presence of our esteemed Queensland government years ago. Is that can you tell us a bit about that story?
Sure. So Queen Victoria formed our colony back in 1859, and the table was first in existence sometime before 1859 in England. It came out in that year to Brisbane. It was used as the main parliamentary table through the election in 1860 into the early 90s when it came to heritage, thanks to, I believe, a premier called Wayne Goss, our Labor premier.
It's a 17-seat oval table, rosewood and leather. The previous owners of Heritage had ideas they might like to take it with them, because, of course, they'd procured it. But then they realised their dining room was never going to seat 17 people. So we have it here, and we've sworn on our firstborn that we'll never sell it, basically. It's a beautiful piece of furniture. It's a bit knocked around, but the stories it could tell, it used to have Bjocke Petersen and hens at each end of it, apparently, so there would be some stories to be heard there.
We have an original photograph from 1914 that shows along the edge of the table little white buttons, which in 1914 must have been Bakelite, and they have since disintegrated, but the wires are still under the table, and there are the holes where the buttons used to be, drilled into the rosewood. So that's one of the reasons why we're called Heritage, but we prefer to call ourselves Héritage these days.
And to the untrained ear, what does that actually mean?
Well, that's drawing on our Frenchness here at the northern end of the Granite Belt. We have lots of French-named hamlets, and we, of course, have the fromage, which is just down the road, and we have the truffle, the truffles, which are just down the road. So the cheese and the truffles and the apples, les pommes, with the biggest apple-growing region.
French towns.
And the French towns. So there's Amiens, Beaucourt, Beaupalme, Mezine, Fleurbaix, Pachadel, what's the other one?
Pozières,
and Somme. So they were all named after the battlefields in World War I, where our Australian soldiers were fallen.
And came back and settled here.
Mm.
You know, it's almost like Stanthorpe is like a mini France. That's beautiful. So it's actually a lovely story to add to people who are learning more about Granite Belt wines and Stanthorpe as a great region for wines.
Yeah, so
absolutely.
Yeah.
Jill, I just heard you struggle before with just a little with the Shiraz Mourvedre Grenache pronunciation. We often call that, if you like, Shazza, move over, dear.
I am so using that from now on.
Yeah, but anyway, so that also just adds to the Frenchness that we've got those many French varieties, including our Chardonnay, which we're very proud of.
Yes, actually, I've definitely noticed that Granite Belt produced beautiful Chardonnays. I'm a big Chardonnay fan myself. What is it that you're doing to your Chardonnays that would make them, you know, better than, not necessarily better, but on the same par as, you know, the good Yarra Valley, Margaret River, Hunter Valley Chardonnays?
Well, I've got to start with a little story there. So John, our winemaker, is a fairly well-built young gentleman with quite a large chest.
And he swims every second day, about 5 kilometres.
And many years ago, when he first took on the winemaking here, about 16 years ago, his lady saw a poster for Wine State. And John puffed out his chest and said, "Well, I can do that." So in his very first vintage of Chardonnay off this vineyard and through this winery, he won Wine State magazine's Wine of the Year as the best wine in Australia or New Zealand with Chardonnay, which is quite an achievement for a small winery in the back blocks of Queensland, basically. What we do differently, it's a Chablis-style Chardonnay, so picked very late when the grapes are very, very ripe, heading towards 14 Beaumé if we can. Fermented in new French oak barrels, but only left there for a short while, so you get a little bit of oakiness, but not too much. And then no malolactic fermentation, so it remains bright and citrusy and sharp rather than soft and buttery.
And the free run going into into those puncheons.
And typically, as Tree said, it's basically only the free run juice. There's very, very, very little pressings in there at all. So a very clean and bright Chardonnay that's, as I said before, quite citrusy and flinty,
Pineapples.
Well, I actually have one in my cellar. I'm going to be pulling it out, popping it in the fridge, and I'll give it a try. What would you suggest that I would pair that with food-wise?
Well, sorry, the first thing is the fridge. Always drink Chardonnay at about 12 degrees, so don't pull it too far.
No, it won't be in there too long. I do believe it's 12 to 13 degrees, spot on. So food-wise, what would you put it with?
We were actually in the Halliday magazine pairing it with a gnocchi. What was inside the gnocchi? It's pasta. You want something pasta and buttery. It goes beautifully.
Nutty, mushroomy, creamy. Yeah. Just richer foods. But never Thai. It's absolutely awful with Thai food.
Yeah, it doesn't quite go well with the spice. Well,
no, I'm very Fiano does. So that Fiano is your Thai food companion.
It does. I'm very fortunate that my very soon to be husband is an excellent chef. So, Mike, if you're listening right now, I think we might have to put that on the menu this week, maybe Wednesday night.
I need to talk to him later.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, we do need to wrap up now, but thank you so much for joining us. I think it's really exciting that two shows in a row, we've had two extraordinary, also from story perspective and wines from Granite Belt. So we wish you guys the best of luck and keep your little fun character up. And I look forward to going through more of the Heritage Estate wines in my cellar.
Thanks, Jill. We are experimenting with our Fiano this season, and it'll be a wooded Fiano. So watch this space.
Sounds good. Fine. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Have a lovely Sunday.
Bye.